ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Chapter 2, text 59. Vishaya vinivartante niraharasya dehinaha rasavarjam rasopyasya param drishtva nivartate vishaya vinivartante niraharasya dehinaha rasavarjam rasopyasya param drishtva nivartate. Translation: the embodied soul may be restricted from sense enjoyment, though the taste for sense objects remains. But seizing such engagements by experiencing a higher taste, he is fixed in consciousness. Continuing the discussion from yesterday, as I was saying, the rasa between two sentient beings that is more complex than the rasa which a sentient being experiences in relation to an insentient being. The example is given of taking a sweet. So one person relishes the rasa or the taste of that, but the sweet ball doesn't relish any rasa. But when there's an exchange, just like in Dasya Ras, there's the master and the servant. Savior Sevak Bhav, this is called in Chaitanya Charitamrita. The feelings between the one who is to be served and the one who is served. So that is more developed than the lack of relationship in which one simply enjoys sense objects. There's mutual reciprocation. And of course, living beings are more complex. They have a psychology, whereas the insentient beings don't have that. Now, in material existence, we try to enjoy both kinds of rasa. Some people become fed up of trying to enjoy these kinds of rasa, and then they want to get liberation from material existence. But just enter a state where there is no rasa whatsoever. That state is either conceived of being either some light that one merges into, or a state of non-existence. Although you can't really talk about a state of non-existence, or a non-state, we could say. Because trying to satisfy the senses, that doesn't bring satisfaction. We may get pleasure from eating a sweet, but then if we eat more and more, we don't get pleasure. It becomes distasteful. If we go on eating and eating and eating. In the spiritual world, we have Madhu Mangal. He can eat any amount of sweets, but well, he may have his limits also. But simply desiring to enjoy without any reciprocation with any living being, that becomes a very distasteful. Not only is there no taste, but it becomes painful. The impersonalists, they desire to merge into a situation where there is no rasa. As it means no reciprocation with any living being. But that's actually a punishment. In prison, that's considered the most severe, well, a very severe punishment. It's not physical torture, but psychological torture. Solitary confinement. It's actually considered one form of torture to have prolonged solitary confinement. Exactly why the psychologists, they can't say, but we know, because there's no rasa. We may become frustrated by material rasa, material exchanges, but we can't do without them either. But anyway, in the material existence, the sensual rasa that we take from in seeing, touching, smelling, tasting, feeling, all these different ways of interacting the senses with their objects in material existence, and interacting with other persons or other even people. They may get fed up of humans, so they like to keep a dog or cat and have some kind of emotional exchange with an animal. But they're temporary and not fully satisfying because they don't have Krishna as their object. The other day I was speaking on the name of Krishna, Purna from Vishnu Sahasranam. Krishna is complete and perfect. So Krishna can completely and perfectly satisfy the desire for rasa, whereas no one else can do so. Now there's the gradation of rasas, from dasya, sakya, vatsalya, shringara rasa, of which the reciprocation between male and female is the most intense. That's true in the material world also, generally speaking. It's the most binding and it's the most intense. And even among sensual encounters, just like we see the sweet as an object to be enjoyed. So we see the body of another person as something to be enjoyed. So it mixes up the sensual rasa and the emotional rasa. It mixes because sexual exchange is, it's not just interaction with the body. Nowadays you can buy inflatable sex dolls, as they call them. You can have sex with a doll. But sensually it won't give the, I presume it won't give the same satisfaction. And there's no emotional exchange. Well, that's, people want to avoid the emotional exchange because that gets complicated and can be frustrating. But the sexual act, it's not complete. Just like eating a sweet, it is complete just by eating it. But the sexual act is not complete without the emotional exchange of having a living person. There are a few people in the world, but they are considered psychologically damaged or tantrics who will have sex with dead bodies. That's considered very gross and ghastly, but normally with a living body, that the idea is there. Now, even with the sweet, eating the sweet, the rasa that experienced by eating the sweet is complete in itself. By tasting the sweet and chewing it, there's also a pleasure. It's not just from the taste, from the texture also. Just if you have some crunchy food, you enjoy the crunch and the crunchy sound. But actually, if that is done in association with others, that becomes more pleasing. That all devotees sit together and they enjoy taking prasadam together. And even feeding others becomes even more enjoyable for persons who are not selfish. They prefer the pleasure that's got from feeding others is more than they get from eating themselves, or they feel very satisfied to eat after they've fed others and seen others happy by taking food. So that rasa in exchange with Krishna, that is complete and perfect, and that liberates us from material, from the material bondage which comes about by trying to enjoy our senses in material existence. It's a simple thing to understand. If we're attached to material enjoyment, sensual enjoyment, even that which is called love in this world, that it will bind us in this material world. And love of Krishna will free us from the illusion of trying to enjoy this material world. Now, many people think that love in this material world is spiritual. Is it not? It's because it's on a high platform, above that of simply trying to enjoy yourself or trying to exploit others. Love is the opposite of exploitation. If you go into a place and you manipulate the people, say you go into a place and the people are very simple, you can manipulate them to your own advantage, or you can act in a manner that benefits them. So if you're a bad person, you'll manipulate them to your advantage. Or if you're good, you have love for them, then you'll act in a way for their benefit. But actually, in this material world, there is no proper love. Because one thing is it's temporary. Another thing is we can't actually benefit others in a material sense. There's no such thing as material. We talk about material benefit, but that's only as it is, the benefit that's given to others, that's only as it's conventionally seen. Otherwise, feeding the poor, it doesn't actually help them, because they'll have to go hungry again. You can say it's some temporary help, but anyway, everyone has to suffer the results of their karmic reactions. So the endeavor to enjoy rasa in this material world, it's going to be a failure, that's for sure. So one has to understand that instead of seeking pleasure in this world, we should try to please Krishna. And that will automatically we will become satisfied ourselves. And I've been quoting this verse again and again, as it's relevant practically in discussion of everything, whatever we're discussing, in terms of Krishna consciousness. Savai pung sang paro dharmo yato bhaktirad hokshaje ahaitukya pratihata yayatma suprasediti. If we simply try to satisfy the senses of he who is beyond sensual perception, mundane sensual perception, that will be our topmost engagement. If we try to satisfy him completely without any personal desire, and we do that as our only engagement, then we ourselves automatically will become satisfied. And as much as we stray from that principle and we try to enjoy ourselves separately, we don't get full bliss, and then we have to suffer for the sin of not giving ourselves fully to Krishna. So it's a simple thing to understand. We are meant for worshipping Krishna, we're meant for serving Krishna, we're meant for engaging our senses in the service of he who is the master of the senses. Sarva padi vinir muktam tat paratvena nirmalam hrishikena hrishikesha sevanam bhakti ruchati. When we go beyond mundane designations, thinking, I am this body, this is something for me to enjoy. When we go beyond such mundane designations, we become situated in pure transcendental consciousness, engaging our senses in the service of he who is the master of the senses, for whom the senses are supposed to be utilized, that is called bhakti. But as long as we don't do that, then we'll think that we will get pleasure from trying to be master of this world, or master of the senses. The one thing is, we try to become the controller of this world, Ishvaroham aham bhogi. I'm the controller of this world, I'm the enjoyer of this world. And then when we see that that's not working, we may try to control our senses so as to be not entangled by the senses and the sense objects. But even if we control the senses without engaging them in the service of Krishna, that's still incomplete and imperfect. And the attempt to control the senses without engaging in the service of Krishna. Actually, just in the previous verse to this, Krishna speaks about that. What's this? 259. Krishna speaks about that. He says,
Yada sangharate chayam kurmongani vasaravashaha indriyan indriyate vyastasya pragya pratishtita.
One who is able to withdraw his senses from sense objects as the tortoise draws its limbs within the shell is firmly fixed in perfect consciousness. So Krishna talks about someone who's able to withdraw his senses from the sense objects. But then again, Krishna says that we may, in this way, in this verse, 259, Krishna says, we may mechanically control our senses, but the sense, the desire remains. So even though one practices to control the senses, without getting the higher taste of coming to Krishna consciousness, of engaging the senses, in the service of the senses, engaging the senses in the service of the master of the senses, then even though we practice and we become a master of the senses, we will not be able to maintain that. Thank you. We won't be able to maintain that situation. We'll never be satisfied. Whoops. It's very difficult because we're surrounded by the sense objects. And even if we try to withdraw ourselves from the sense objects, just like we may be a yogi who goes to a cave to meditate, but they will remain in the mind. Or something which is not very sensually enjoyable, we'll take it to be sensually enjoyable. Just like the yogi, he may have a regime of eating only roots and fruits from the forest. And he may think, well, that's a very austere diet, but it may be for him that becomes to him very relishable. And he thinks, oh, now the mangoes are coming into season. I'll enjoy it. Or you may enjoy the pleasant atmosphere of the forest. It's a kind of sense enjoyment. Maybe a sense enjoyment in the mode of goodness. But the fact is that we're surrounded by all kinds of sense objects. And the tendency, as long as we don't have the As long as we haven't cultivated and perfected the tendency to engage all our senses in the service of Krishna, then we're going to be attracted to enjoying our senses for ourselves. So this process of trying to personally control the senses, or just withdraw them, this, like the tortoise withdraws his limbs within a shell, what do? Close our eyes, block our ears? Does it mean that someone who's born deaf, dumb and blind, they're automatically a yogi? Does it mean that? No? No, it doesn't mean that at all.
So the point is that we may follow various religious rules and regulations and rituals. They're meant to purify our consciousness, but the purification of the consciousness is not simply becoming detached from matter, but becoming attached to Krishna. That's the whole point. And then one gets a higher taste. When one gets a higher taste, he can give up the lower taste. And Srila Prabhupada gave the example that if someone's given some nice sweet rice to eat, then they'll give up the... if they're accustomed to eating very rough and raw rice, but then they get it, then they're given sweet rice, very good quality to eat, then automatically they'll give up the taste for the lower kind of rice. Actually, that might not happen very easily. I remember years ago in Mayapur, and I presume it's the same kind of syndrome is going on, that we had many Bengali devotees who are from a village background. So they like to eat the rough red rice that village people are used to, which is very hard to digest for city people who sit around all day in offices. But the city people, they like fine rice. And if you give the Bengali villagers the fine rice, they won't eat it. They don't like it at all. They like the rough rice, which gives them a lot of nourishment and they can work hard. So there's an example of someone who doesn't want to give up the... But if they come to a better mode of life, of course this is a very rough material example. Another example, the story, of course not a factual story, but the idea is given, that there are two sides of river. On one side of the river, people live carrying heavy rocks on their back. And the more rocks they can carry, the more prestigious they are. So they're all bent down carrying rocks. And on the other side, and it's hard work, and it's miserable, but there's prestige attached to carrying heavy rocks. So they, wherever they go, they carry rocks around with them in a sack on their back. And on the other side of the river are people living very happily, dancing and singing. They don't carry anything on their back. And sometimes the people on the rock side of the river, they come and look over, and the people on the happy side, they say, come and join us. They say, oh, what do we have to do? We have to cross the river. But then we'll drown, the rocks will make us drown. So throw your rocks away, then you can easily cross the river. No, we can't throw away our rocks. What are you talking about? Throw away our rocks? Oh, what a terrible idea. So it's like that. We're carrying material attachments which do no good to us, but the more possessions we have, we think we're the better off. But actually they weigh us down more and more. And if we can give up attachment to them, then we can easily cross over the Vaitarani river and go to the spiritual world and be happy forever. So an important point to understand here is that it's not that, okay, all right, we all understood, right? We're supposed to be Krishna conscious, serving Krishna either in the mode of servitude or in the mode of friendship or in the mode of parenthood or as a lover. But it's not that we just, okay, what do you want to be? I think I'll be a peacock in Vrindavan, that's neutral. Or I'll be a friend of Krishna going out in the cowherd field. I'm going to be one of the lovers of, I'm going to be a gopi. It doesn't happen like that. One has to engage one's senses in the service of the master of the senses by the process of sadhana bhakti. Sadhana bhakti means to engage all our senses by hearing about Krishna, by speaking about Krishna, by taking food offered to Krishna, by smelling the flowers offered to Krishna, by seeing the form of Krishna. In this way, one is gradually reformed, just like an alcoholic. If you just immediately stop, then it's too devastating for him. He won't be able to maintain the situation. So we're addicted to that which is not good for us, but we can immediately transform our existence into auspicious existence. We may not immediately enter our constitutional position as a servant of Krishna, but, well, we do, but not in the specific form. But we may engage in the process by which all the senses are engaged in the service of Krishna. And gradually one gets a higher taste. One becomes attached to this process, and then one gradually becomes eligible to actually enter into Krishna's abode and serve him there in one's original constitutional position. So the same material ingredients that cause our bondage in this material world, when we engage material things in the service of Krishna, that becomes the cause of our freedom from material existence. Just like if we see a nice rose and we think, let me smell that, or let me offer this to my girlfriend, and then she'll be happy with me and then I can enjoy her. So if we think like that, that's material understanding. But if we see a nice rose and say, let me offer it to Krishna, we offer it to Krishna, then we smell it. That becomes the cause of our liberation from material existence. Narad Muni described this when speaking to Vyasadeva. Amayo yascha bhutanam jayate yena suvrata tadeva hi amayam dravyam napunati chikitsitam. O good soul, Narad said to Vyasadeva, does not a thing applied therapeutically cure a disease which was caused by that very same thing? And Srila Prabhupada in his purport gives the example that by eating excessively milk products, just like thick sweet rice, cooked down very thick, so if by eating that excessively, one may get diarrhea. But the cure for diarrhea is to take milk in a different form, in the form of yogurt. Yogurt with some salt, ginger and pepper and this and that. That will cure it. So that it's a similar thing. It's not that we just withdraw from the world, but we engage within this world, but with a different motive, and in engaging the everything in the service of Krishna. So Krishna, even in sadhana bhakti, before we come to the perfect stage, we make Krishna, we go on enjoying rasa, because everything one does is for the sake of getting some taste, right? I read that in the beginning from Nectar Devotion. We're looking for some taste. So instead of looking for some taste from material objects, we see Krishna. We serve Krishna, and Krishna becomes the impetus for serving him. We may work in the office for a boss or in a factory, but the impetus to work is not the boss himself. The impetus is the money I get, which is meant for serving my family. But with serving Krishna, he himself is the impetus. And especially hearing about Krishna, all the processes of sadhana bhakti, but especially hearing about Krishna awakens the desire to serve him more and more. Nitya siddha Krishna prema shadha kabunoi shravanadi shuddha chitte kariyodoi. The love for Krishna is dormant in everyone's consciousness. It can be awakened by the process of serving Krishna by sadhana bhakti, beginning with hearing about him. So Srila Prabhupada, in his introduction to the Krishna book, wrote that everyone has a natural aptitude to hear about other people. We like to hear stories, gossip. Did you hear about this? Did you hear that? Or even imaginary people. It's a funny thing, isn't it? Novels with imaginary people. They don't actually exist, but when we read a novel, we agree to the terms and conditions, we know it's not true, but we're going to pretend it's true. And then we enjoy some kind of imaginary rasa. The great thing about Krishna is that he's real. So Srila Prabhupada, he writes about the natural aptitude to enjoy by hearing. Srila Prabhupada writes that the inclination to hear something about others may be utilized in hearing the pastimes of the Lord, then one can immediately evolve to his transcendental nature. By reading about other people, I saw somewhere that there are 20,000 known biographies. 20,000 in the world biographies. Maybe that's just in English. What to speak of other languages? And there are autobiographies. People like to read to write about themselves. And many people like to read also autobiographies. Some autobiographies of dead people are still selling well. The autobiography of a yogi by Yogananda, still in print. He's dead. Gandhi's autobiography is probably still in print. Experiments with Truth. My Experiments with Truth. But by hearing about Krishna, the result is that we understand that hearing about these different people, what does it matter? What is the news, the newspaper? It's what has the prime minister said? What has the president said? This, that, what's going on? And we even invent, and life itself may not be interesting enough, so we invent all kinds of sports. And then we have the great competition between this tennis player and that tennis player. A major match is coming up, and then we have all experts predicting what will happen, who will win, you know, betting on it. And then we have, then there's a whole sub-genre of writing about the tennis stars when they're not playing tennis. This one is his girlfriend and this and that, and they went out to eat dinner and so many things. And same with the cinema. It's like that. It's a novel, it has no meaning, but it's taken seriously by people who don't have anything really serious to do with their lives. And then what do the film stars do? Now is marrying this one, divorcing that one, and it becomes a whole subject matter for meditation upon by people who don't know about Krishna. But then when we hear and chant about Krishna, we automatically become uninterested in hearing about mundane people. Even if they may seem to be very great people, Mahatma Gandhi, they gave him the title Mahatma. He was considered a very great person. But devotees, they know that the real Mahatma is someone who's engaged in glorifying Krishna. Mahatma anastu mang paratha daivin prakriti maashritaha bhajantyananya manaso gyadva bhutata mabhyayam. So again, we should be careful not to jump in too quickly to the liberated state. Because if we start thinking, okay, I'm a gopi, or I'm a cowherd boy in Vrindavan, and I'll meditate upon that. But if we're still attracted to the mundane rasa, then in our minds we'll mix up the spiritual and the material, and we will take the spiritual to be material. For someone who is a pure devotee, they do that. They see the material as spiritual. But our tendency will be to see the spiritual as material. It becomes very dangerous. And then if we think that, oh, you see, this is someone else's wife, but actually I'm on the spiritual platform, and so is she, and so we're enjoying ourselves, and it's all spiritual because we're all spiritual. But actually, it's it's most degraded. But we're thinking it's spiritual. We're ascribing spirituality to it. That's what the Prakriti Sahajiyas do. They want to take everything very easily. Without controlling their senses, they want to enter into the highest platform. So both of these verses are important, that one should try to control one's senses, but at the same time one should understand that complete control of the senses comes when we're completely in love with Krishna. But in the meantime, we have to also endeavor to control our senses. There's the positive method and the negative method. On one hand, we're cultivating hearing and chanting about Krishna and serving Krishna. On the other hand, we should know that until we're completely perfect in serving Krishna and we have no residual attraction to this material world, we have to be careful that we don't fall into sense enjoyment. Therefore, in sadhana bhakti, it's not only hearing and chanting about Krishna, but there are also rules to restrict us from engaging our senses in matter. No meat eating, no gambling, no intoxication, no illicit sex. There's the positive rule to associate with devotees. There's a negative rule, which is a concomitant rule, not to associate with non-devotees. So we have to see the positive side and the negative side also. So this sadhana, it's meant to cultivate the relationship between Krishna, who is the Vishaya, he's the prem, he is the object of love, and the asha. We are the love of Krishna is meant to be in our heart, and we also serve those within whom the love of Krishna is already fully in their heart. So our process is not to serve Krishna alone, but to serve him with all his servants, those already fully in Krishna consciousness. And then the sense objects, instead of seeing things which stimulate our desire for sense enjoyment, it stimulates our tendency to serve Krishna. Same thing. If we see a rose, if we're in mundane consciousness, we want to smell it ourselves or give it to our girlfriend. But if we're in spiritual consciousness or we're cultivating Krishna consciousness, then we want to offer it to Krishna. So the result of one is the same rose. It can either bind us in material existence or it can bind us to the lotus feet of Krishna. Now if we offer that rose to our girlfriend and she smiles and we feel happy. We offer it to Krishna, we know Krishna is happy, and we feel happy. But the result of one is that we become purified. The result of the other is we remain in material consciousness. And again, on the path of sadhana, we should always be careful and know that our motives our attraction is mixed. So be very careful. Okay, that's what I have to say here and now on that topic. If anyone has any question about that now, please ask it.
Hare Krishna. Srimad Bhagavatam, first canto, first chapter, verse number 3. Srila Prabhupada explains in the purport, it's I think second paragraph, that I suppose it's mundane relationship or rasa. It can be experienced only within species.
Yeah. But I don't understand it, to tell you the truth.
Yeah, because we can see that people
see the people reciprocate with dogs.
Yeah.
So I don't understand it. I'll just say that. That's all. I thought someone might ask that because I gave the. But even Prabhupada himself gives the example that when people they keep a dog, they love their dog.
it could be that some aspects of this rasa
but otherwise, if it's taken as an absolute statement, it doesn't, pratyaksha, according to what's observed, it doesn't seem to be correct. Maybe we could, this kind of thing, when this kind of question arises, we have to see that, we have to see the original Sanskrit of the commentators. It's often taken from previous acharyas, and then it often helps to clarify the point. Then, someone else had a question. Yeah.
Nectar of Devotion, we just wrote before a couple of days after Mangalarati, but my English is not good, maybe Adatta can help me. It's writing something. На английском. Okay. Можете. It's in English.
That's from Nectar of Devotion. Which chapter?
Sachitananda.
Oh, Krishna's qualities, Sachitananda. Mm. One of Krishna's qualities. It is stated in Bhagavad Gita that one has to become full of joyfulness. This is not exactly joyfulness, but a sense of freedom from all anxiety. Freedom from all anxieties may be the first principle of joyfulness, but that is not actual joyfulness for those who realize the self or become Brahma Bhuta.
And sometimes in Krishna consciousness we really feel like very comfortable and nice, but Srila Prabhupada said it's not that we get some ruchi. We are just stick on this platform of no stress, and I'm very happy. I'm not, when I come in this temple of no any stress, but somehow I'm feeling that we are not grow, that we are not progressing from this.
To progress from the platform of no stress, we have to accept stress in Krishna's service. We come to the. This material world is full of anxiety. We can come to the Brahma Bhuta stage, which means beyond material anxiety. No sweat, no problem. We have to go up to the platform of spiritual anxiety. When Mother Yashoda, she's afraid that Krishna will be attacked by some demon, that fear that she feels is far, far more advanced than the impersonalist who's simply free from material distress, or even the devotee who's satisfied just chanting Hare Krishna without endeavoring to serve Krishna in various ways. Especially preaching is full of stress. Srila Prabhupada pushed us to preach. That brings us to the spiritual position, helps us to advance.
Also, yesterday you were explaining different kinds of ecstasies. Vibhava, Anubhava.
Well,
others.
Vibhava is the stimulus.
Yeah.
And then Anubhava is the expression of that. Expression of ecstasy.
Somehow, to me, it seems that Vibhava and Udipana, which...
Yeah, Udipana is one type of Vibhava.
So Udipana is one type of Vibhava.
Stimulus for devotion is Krishna himself, but then that's Vibhava. But then the Udipana means hearing Krishna's flute, seeing the river Yamuna and thinking Krishna bathed here. There's there's a whole song by Bhaktivinoda Thakur in Sharanagati, his collection of Radha Kunda Tatta Kunja Kutira Govardhana Parvata Yamuna Nira. These are all udipanas, or stimuli for devotion. The cottage in a grove on the bank of Radha Kund, that's the first one. Then Govardhan Hill, the water of the Yamuna. Oh, there's so many. The Krishna's conch is mentioned, Karatal, so many things. Anything in relation to Krishna reminds us of Krishna, stimulates devotion for him.
One more just information. You mentioned about Prakriti Sahajiyas. Is it still exist today in present time?
Sahajiyas do exist, sure.
I didn't saw him. Before I saw in Vrindavan somebody there like Krishna, but today I'm not so much.
There's all Sampradaya Sahajiyas. They keep away from us and we keep away from them. Yourself?
Hare Krishna. You mentioned how the mentality of thinking I'm becoming a gopi, I'm becoming this and that. So my question is, does Jiva Tattva ever participates in directly in some rasa? For example, we know that our acharyas, we are servants of the servants of the servants of,
yeah.
they are never directly, they are always making arrangements to help. Like,
yeah, yeah. Nikunja yuna rati keli siddhya ya yale be yukti apekshaniya tadrati dakshad ati vallabhasya. Vandegaroshi Charanarvind, and we pray to the Acharya as a servant of the gopis who assists in making arrangements for the loving pastimes of Radha and Krishna. Apekshaniya. Tatrati Dakshadati, they may directly also serve Krishna. They may collect the flowers, make a garland, and bring it. But yeah, generally it's servant of the servant of the servant. And they're most happy like that. They're most happy seeing that my group leader is directly serving Krishna. And yeah, they may have some direct service also, which even the... Yeah, they may have. Yeah. Yeah, some question?
Ja bih pitala da li je onda Krishna stvorio materialnu energiju s namjerom da uvjetovanoj duši omogući vježbanje da se oslobodi vezanosti kad znači ne smije osjetilno uživati u njoj.
Možeš se im da trebalo nekako polovo.
Okay, her question is, did Krishna make this material energy to relieve us from our conditions?
Krishna made the material energy to relieve us from the conditions. We made the material energy to be conditioned.
So conditioned soul can
we are here
practice.
Because we want to avoid Krishna, and Krishna has his plan to bring us back. So both things are there. We have our plan and Krishna has his plan. Krishna facilitates our plan and he has his own plan also. Just like the government puts criminals in the prison, they have to go for, and they, within the prison they'll try to enjoy themselves in various ways by, I don't know what they do, playing table tennis or beating up other prisoners or watching TV or something like that. But the government has its plan to reform the prisoners. In America, they don't call prisons, they call correction facility. Correction facility, something like that. It may be different in different states. Okay, we'll finish there. All glories to you. Yeah? You have a question? Okay, please ask it.
Thank you, Maharaj, for a nice lecture. My question is, I didn't really understand properly your sentence when you said that our practice can be mixed in some endeavor to connect our senses with Krishna and in tasting this some kind of rasa, and that we can consider in our conditioned state spiritual for material.
Yeah, well, that's that we warned about. Please don't stand with your back to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That Chaitanya Mahaprabhu warns about while we're cultivating the creeper of devotion, it may become spoiled by Vaishnava Parad, by Nishidacha, Kutinati, Jibe, Hingshan, Lab, Puja, Pratishtadi, Jata, Upashakagam. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu warns that even while cultivating devotion, the devotion can become mixed with not properly following by adopting forbidden behavior, by being diplomatic and not straightforward in one's behavior, by being envious of others, by desiring monetary gain, by desiring honor, by desiring a position. And these are just some examples Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gives. So I might think, I am sitting on a big seat because I want to benefit others. But in our heart there's also a desire to be honored by others, a mundane desire. So it may be mixed. You may desire to benefit someone, but there may be some personal motive also. May be mixed. That's why discrimination is required also, because we see in the short history of our ISKCON that some of the leaders have gone way off. And we may say that, well, they did it with good intentions, but at the same time we have to see that some of the things they do and say, we can't accept it as spiritual. If we accept it as spiritual, then we become misled. So we have to maintain the discrimination. One of our big leaders thought that taking LSD was enhancing his Krishna consciousness, and prescribed that for his disciples also. So we may say, well, it's well-intentioned because he wants us to come to a platform of Krishna consciousness, but we should discriminate. That's a very gross example. There may be others also which are more subtle and more difficult to pinpoint. But that's really another topic. We're branching out into another topic now.
But before a couple of days we all spoke about explosion of Hare Krishna movements. And somehow you mentioned that from that time it looked like leaders who was a little bit with some desires, is not pure desire of pleasure of Krishna, but they have some their own desire. But it was a work. It was an explosion of
movement. It worked for some time.
Yeah, but can we do some compromise?
Well, for some time, yeah.
That we still
agree. What is that? How does that verse go? Parinama vishameva. I can't remember exactly, but something might seem like nectar in the beginning, but it becomes poison at the end, and it actually did. What seemed to be so great for Krishna consciousness, it turned out to be a total disaster. It wasn't exactly to the point. How does that verse go? You won't know. I can't remember. You remember that verse? In the beginning, like nectar, Pariname Vishamiva, Tatsukam Rajasam Smritam. How does it begin? Vishamiva are the key words. I can look it up. Just can't remember it just now. It's good to know the Sanskrit. All right. Yatadagre Vishami. No, that's not the right one. That's Vishayendriya Samyogat. Ah, that's it. Yatadagre Mritopamam. That happiness which is from the combination of the senses with the sense objects might seem at the beginning to be like nectar, but it becomes transformed into poison. Tatsukam Rajasam, that's happiness in the mode of passion. So a lot of things were going on, we can say in retrospect, wasn't fully Krishna conscious. It was mixed with the mode of passion. The desire to outdo others, to show oneself to be great, to enjoy money and fancy cars. If we look at the history of ISKCON, in the years just following Srila Prabhupada, there was that, along with the desire to spread Krishna consciousness, there were these kind of desires, and it became disastrous. So you could say it worked, but it wasn't sustained.
Then, what makes it work?
What makes it work is there's pure motivation. And we only desire to serve Krishna. We may not, desires are very subtle, so therefore we have to very carefully stick to the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada and what he said and try to understand what he did and be careful. We should be very careful. While Srila Prabhupada was here, he was monitoring us. The GBC is supposed to do that with Prabhupada not directly there to monitor us. Watchdogs, it's called the watchdog. We're really getting into a whole different arena here now, so let's just finish there. Vanchakalpa tarubhyas chakipa sindubhyavacha.